Back together again on a Thursday with you, August 22nd, 2024, on Connecticut Today. I open the show lamenting the political tone deafness, as I see it, of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. University of New Haven Associate Professor of Accounting and Taxation, Dr. James Mose, joined us to talk about some of the economic issues being brought up in the current White House campaign. And only in Bridgeport.com blogger Lenny Grimaldi stopped by with the latest Park City buzz, including updates on state elections enforcement commission investigations and the ongoing Success Village issues. So I've told you folks numerous times over the past several months, leading up to both the Republican National Convention a couple of weeks ago in Milwaukee and the current DNC get-together going on in Chicago, I don't watch the conventions. They bore me. There's nothing really in doubt. I love the older conventions when people convened and in convention. And the nation didn't really know what was going to happen in the early days. They wouldn't find out for 3 or 4 days or a couple of weeks until their correspondents got back. And then, you know, when the telegraphs came in, the telegraph services coast to coast, you at least found out the next day or the day after who the nominees were or if they were still voting. And then, of course, the advent of radio and television and, you know, you and I, we've talked about this up until about 1980, 1976, 1980 were the last real contested conventions. And now it's become a 4-day infomercial. So I did not, well, once I got home, I did not watch 1 second of the Republican convention. I didn't care. The only convention coverage I actually really followed was when we were here on the show a couple of weeks ago, and you remember as the roll call vote was happening, you know, the kind of thing that didn't happen in Chicago last night, you know, that roll call vote. It happened a couple of days ago. It was ceremonial, but you know what happened. They did this, you know, on the QT to snuff out any sort of real opposition here. So the only time that I really actually listened, honestly, was a couple of weeks ago here. Remember, I was bringing up the sound, and I said, okay, Trump's the nominee, whatever. And I have not watched one solitary second of what's going on with the Democrats in Chicago, because frankly, I don't care. Because they won't talk policy. What policies they talk, they stink. Okay, poots. But I have been following what's going on. And I do occasionally read a summary of the convention during the day, and I listen to some sound bites. And I cannot for the life of me. Now, I know a lot of Democrats and progressives, and the ones I know are pretty smart. But I cannot for the life of me believe. And maybe you watch some of this, if you want to chime in on this. Did you have any moments where you went, huh? Huh? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. The rank idiocy I see happening in Chicago and read about, I don't have to read or listen to the context of the speeches. Just who's there, who's speaking when, and little side things, like, for example, we talked about Monday night, and we talked about the fact that the Democrats are saying, well, you know, the applause forced us to push the sitting president of the United States of America. He's still there. He's slowing down. We see that. We even saw some of that on Monday night. God bless his soul. Not God rest, but God bless him. And they pushed him off to 11:30. Well, it was the applause. It was the applause. How stupid do you think we are? You didn't want this guy anywhere near primetime because you knew what the speech was going to be. So that's the first thing. And I said to myself, well, all right, they probably didn't want him near primetime. They're going to use the excuse that everybody went long, and we had to drop James Taylor from the bill. And listen, if that's the, there's one of two things here. you're either lying through your teeth or you're really a lot more stupid than I thought you were. How you don't tell people you've got to stay to a certain time and we've built in applause time. And there's somebody usually with a stopwatch on the side telling you to let's go, ramp it up, turn up the teleprompter, let's go. All right, so that was Monday night, okay? Michelle Obama, Tuesday night. Now, I didn't really pay attention to what she was saying, but late last night, I realized last night was Wednesday, and we had a lot of stuff going on with the storm recovery and stuff like that. And the worst thing you can be, because the Obamas live in their own world, all right? The worst thing you can be is tone deaf. Now, you Democrats out there, you progressives who are Obama fans, you had to be cringing at Michelle Obama, not because of who she is, not because of what she represents. Frankly, I don't care. The Obamas can make as much money as they want. God bless them. But the fact that she got out there, and again, she can wear whatever she wants, but her speech on Tuesday, and the more I read about this, the more my jaw hits the table here. Her speech on Tuesday was aimed at wealth and the wealthy. You can't make this up. Now, let me just give you a couple of sentences of what she said, because it's mind-boggling. And all the lemmings are out there going, oh, honey, okay? Yeah, Sorry. She said, quote, she and my father, meaning her mother, she and my father did not aspire to be wealthy. In fact, they were suspicious of folks who took more than they needed. They understood that it wasn't enough for their kids to thrive if everyone else around us was drowning. So my mother volunteered at the local school. Her mother always looked out for other kids on the block. She was glad to see their to do the thankless, unglamorous work that for generations had strengthened the fabric of this nation. She continued the belief that if you do unto others, if you love your neighbor, if you work and scrape and sacrifice, it'll pay off. If not for you, then maybe for your children and your grandchildren. All right, Michelle, thank you for judging our morals. We appreciate that. Now, she does this, and again, God bless her. There haven't been too many first ladies of the United States. Her books sell like crazy. She talks about her mother and her parents, I guess, not trusting the wealthy as she's up there in a $2,400 outfit. The worst thing you can be is tone deaf. See, this plays into my theory here, and I've said this a lot in my years doing talk shows. The Democrats and the Republicans both love money. They do. The major elites in both party love money. The difference is the Republicans will admit it. They will push for lower taxes. They should say everybody should be a millionaire. Don't overtax billionaires. It's the American system. The Democrats have a lot of those people, but they're phonies. Michelle Obama was wearing a $1,700 Monz. This is a designer. I have no idea who it is. Monse blazer and $900 trousers. And again, God bless her. That outfit she wore is worth more than everything I have, clothes-wise, including my two suits. I got a couple of tuxedos, whatever, that I haven't worn in years. But she gets up there and she starts lecturing us about the wealthy wearing a $2,600 suit. Now, God bless her. She dresses very well. Her stylists are great. Mr. Obama looked great. But again, people, hello. You cannot be that tone deaf. You're going to lecture us about the wealthy wearing a $1,700 blazer and $900 trousers. And again, I saw the picture. She looked great. But come on. Please. I'm not even halfway through my list here. And like I said, I despise the conventions. But what I got to talk about is the stupidity here and the lecturing. And again, both parties love money. Oh, and by the way, the Obamas, God bless them again, they have a net worth of $70 million. They have real estate holdings in Hawaii, Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., and Chicago. Good on them. That means they live in these places. They have probably have domestic help. Somebody made a commission when they saw. It's how the American system goes. But my God. You're going to lecture us about the wealthy? Please. Oh, and I'm not done. I got my list here. And I know the Vice President, Ms. Harris, is going to give her a speech tonight. That's going to be interesting. It'll be a great infomercial. The balloons will fall and all that. But my God. And who was the featured speaker last night? Hey, baby. How you doing? I'm waving this bony finger. Oh, I got stuff to say about that, too. My God. Again, you can invite whomever you want at your convention, but tone deaf? Read the room? As my uncle used to say, James starts us off in West Haven. James, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine. Yes. Hey, listen to me. You know what it sounds like? It sounds like Republicans are jealous.
No.
It sounds like you know that the speeches that you are hearing, that Donald Trump could never make one of those speeches if you wrote it out for him and practiced for 2 years and every day for 2 years. You know he can't do it. I heard his speeches. His speeches make no sense.
Sometimes they don't. You're right. James, my friend, this is not about Donald Trump. If you've listened to this show, you know I am no fan of Mr. Trump. I've said that numerous times. But as a guy who's followed politics for about 40 years, James, the worst thing a politician can be, either a Republican or a Democrat, my friend, is tone deaf. And God bless the Obamas for all the success they've had. But come on, you cannot lecture people about the wealthy when it just, James, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't look good. It's not a good look.
Well, Michelle Obama is rich. Barack Obama is rich.
Good.
And they're rich. That's a fact.
Yeah.
But they're not lecturing Republicans on. I think they're lecturing Republicans. They act like children. Every time I hear a Republican talk, I feel like I'm listening to a child with the name calling and this and that. And I'm just, if I had advice for Kamala, I would tell her, don't stoop to their level. Just keep it professional and keep it adult.
And I agree with you, James, here, because as an impartial watcher here, because like I said, I don't watch these things because they're not real conventions. You know that. I'm like, you know, the name calling is funny, but you got to win or lose on the policy, right? That's what's going to win or lose, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. James, thank you, my friend. Appreciate the call there. James in West Haven, where I spent a good number of my youthful years. James, thank you. Listen, I don't besmirch the Obamas one bit. Listen, they weren't born rich. I mean, you know, they Michelle Obama, I think they're both attorneys. She was a hospital administrator. We know about Mr. Obama. But my God, you can stop. Could we stop the class warfare? It doesn't work. But I understand it plays to the base. James, thank you. Joining us right now is Dr. James Mose. He's Associate Professor of Accounting and Taxation at the University of New Haven. We'll talk a little bit about what the next man or woman in the White House may do, and what about promises made and promises kept, and what influence a chief executive has on all this? Hey, Dr. Mose, it's Paul here on WICC. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Very good, Dr. Mose. Thank you. So help my audience here and kind of peel this apart. Now, Vice President Harris is, of course, the de facto nominee. She's going to make her speech tonight. A couple of days ago, in fact, it was a week ago tomorrow, she rolled out, I guess, a basic economic outline, which had kind of been leaked to the press. I mean, I remember last in the morning before that, there were already articles in the Washington Post and in the New York Times regarding some key points she was making. One thing she did is talk about trying to battle price gouging here, because obviously a big talking point on both sides is, hey, what's your cash register tape look like at the, you know, at the end of your supermarket trip, and vote for me, I'll get it lower. And she talked about price gouging, and some people are saying, well, that's price controls. So what have you gleaned from that, Dr. Mose? Is that in any way practical? Are there some things a president can do or not here?
Well, there's some things a president can do. I mean, if we go back in history 40 years, and I'm not going to go too much detail into this, wage and price controls were in the Nixon era of the 1970s. They didn't work.
Yeah.
Okay. And basically what he did by they put in an act. It was called the Economic Stabilization Act of 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And what that did is that was supposed to put an initial 90-day hold on wage and price controls. It didn't work. It went on a little bit further. There's no way that you could actually stop the economy from growing. And what it was doing was, when you freeze prices, you stop growth. It's as simple as that. Now, moving forward to what Vice President Harris is mm-hmm. looking at, he's just come up with a general, we're going to put a ban on price gouging.
Yeah.
Not really too specific about it, how it's going to work. Perhaps tonight, when she gives her speech, there'll be a little bit more. It's hard to tell, but her main target seemed to be grocery stores.
Yeah.
And that is kind of problematic in its other sense, because when you look at the overall margins of grocery stores net, I saw an article this morning.
Yeah.
It was 1.6% margin.
Wow, 1.6%.
That's not a lot.
1.6%, 1.5 cents on a dollar. Wow, wow.
Yeah, that's their profit margin. Their costs are going up. So I don't know how this is going to work. Personally, I don't think it's well thought out.
Yeah, and you know what, Dr. Mose? I mean, I was in my family. We had we didn't have a big store like a Stop and Shop or an Aldi's or a ShopRite or a Big Y or something like that. But we had a small kind of neighborhood family grocery store, and mm-hmm. others in our family had that. And I can remember, now the store closed years ago, but even as a young kid, Dr. Mose, I can remember my uncle, God rest his soul, and my father, God rest his soul, you know, when customers would get a little testy about something, they would turn to them very nicely, and usually in Italian, say, how much you think I'm making on that? You know, on that can of tuna fish, how much am I making on that? And isn't the argument against this, Dr. Mose, that just the number of stores, both big and small, kind of work in the consumer's favor? I mean, wouldn't you have to find legal evidence of collusion here to make this work?
I would think so. I mean, if you looked in the news, and you guys reported it as well, Stop and Shop is closing 5 stores
yeah.
in the state.
Yeah.
Why? Because they're not making their margins. All right. They're just not making it. Their price points, their sale price points, they can't keep adjusting for the increase in costs. So something has to go boom, and that's the margin. That's where we get down to this like 1.6%
yeah.
Growth margin.
And now as far as something else, Dr. Mose, that she suggested, and again, she was kind of light on details, but it, you know, she ran it up the flagpole. Some manner of first-time homebuyer mortgage assistance to the tune of something like $25,000. You know, I know some people in the real estate business are like, well, you need more info on this, more details. The devil may be in there. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, everything that she is proposing, it may be good, may be bad. I'm not going to comment on it.
Yeah.
Until we can get some more details on what it is, exactly how it's going to work, we're not going to be able to draw conclusions on it. You're right. She's running these things out the flagpole. It's interesting that you raised the point about the $25,000 first-time home buyers.
Assistance.
Amount, right?
Yeah.
I was up in another state looking at a house, a weekender, and I ran that question by two different real estate agents.
Really?
Yeah, and here's what they told me. They said, you know what? All this is going to do is be more inflationary because the sellers are going to raise their prices that magic $25,000.
You know, Dr. Mose, the only encounters I've had with real estate people are when I bought and sold two or three properties. But again, my friends that do this say, well, that's great. I can jack my prices by $25,000.
Exactly. You know? And overall to the economy, I say it's inflationary because I saw something this morning on one of your competitor channels, that they quoted it. I think it was they quoted the GAO as saying that that was going to cost $100 billion.
Wow. Yeah.
And who pays for that? Right?
Yeah. Finally, I know one of your areas is taxation. Now, there's always, you know, Dr. Mose, and you know this, and you probably teach your students this. One of the big things that's always bandied about, it's a political football, baseball, basketball, and hockey puck, is the corporate tax, the corporate tax level.
Yep.
And I guess the Mr. Trump's campaign and Ms. Harris's campaign are bandying about, you know, she wants maybe a 1% rise. He wants a 1% cut. But again, even a 0.5% or 1% is potentially what? Hundreds of billions of dollars here. How do you view all that?
Well, there's a couple of things going on with the tax area between the two different parties.
Yeah.
One is that Vice President Harris wants a 7% increase in the corporate tax.
Oh, really?
21% to 28%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right now it's 21%. That came through with the Tax and Jobs Act that President Trump put through in 2017, that here and after referred to as the Trump tax cuts.
Yeah.
He wants to keep that in place, right? And maybe give you more. He hasn't specified what, how much, or where. And she wants to let them sunset. These tax cuts that were put in sunset. What I mean by sunsetting is they're good for a specific period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not renewed by Congress, they revert to what they were. That would give a big increase in taxes. The increase in the corporate tax that you mentioned is very, very concerning because what's going to happen? That's going to be highly inflationary. Corporations are going to have to make their margins. In coming up with their net income, tax is one of those items that costs, right? It reduces that.
Sure.
So they're going to have to be passing that along. And when they pass that along, they're just going to increase their selling prices. That's going to increase their revenues. And it's a vicious spiral.
So you're saying
8% is a big piece.
Yeah, so you're saying that maybe in the corporate tax departments of some of these companies, when they read that, they were passing around the Pepto Bismol. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I spent 40 years in public accounting and corporate corporate tax and the like. And you're exactly right. They were passing the Pepto-Bismol around. That's a gentle way of saying it.
Yeah, wow. Dr. James Mose, University of New Haven Associate Professor of Accounting and Taxation, giving us a little bit of an insight as to what could happen. And again, we relied on detail here, but this is running it up the flagpole with some of these potential Harris administration policies. Hey, Dr. Mose, thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate it, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. Dr. James Mose there, Associate Professor of Accounting and Taxation at the University of New Haven. Lenny Grimaldi is here. Lenny, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Uncle Paulie, I experience joy every Thursday at 5:15. I experience joy. Don't you experience joy? I mean, I feel for you.
Yeah.
You know, you're my uncle, and I feel for you, but I experience the joy, you know?
The joy. Yeah, we'll get to you. We'll get to your weekly report on your former boss. Lenny, I'm shocked. The State Elections Enforcement Commission, Lenny, say it isn't so. What are they telling us? Breaking news today. Oh, my God.
I'm shocked. Shocked gambling is going on in this establishment.
Yeah, so now what? So what's going on here?
Just more on the pile. That's all. How much more can you add onto the pile? And there's going to be more. And so the State Elections Enforcement Commission has civil oversight over elections. They can fine, they can't conduct criminal activity. So in the course of investigations based on complaints, they can initiate, but most of the stuff they act on are complaints that come into them from various entities. And they decided today, well, there's a couple of more complaints that we feel rises to the level of potential criminality involving a couple of politicians in Connecticut, including City Council President Ida Nieves. And they referred it to the Chief State's Attorney's Office, led by Patrick Griffin, and that agency will look into it and see if there's something there. Just because they refer doesn't mean
But Lenny, is this a result of, as you've been telling me and Chris Caruso's been telling me, a lot of people saying, hey, they're still talking to primarily some of these seniors and looking into these senior complexes? Do you think that's an offshoot of these new referrals or not? Do you know anything about that?
I think it's a little bit of it as far as public pressure.
Yeah.
But these two today are separate from that. These go back over a year ago. So these two complaints that were referred to the Chief State's Attorney's Office go back to the mayoral primary last year. And so you've got a lot of things in motion here. You mentioned, coercion or pressure on senior citizens to vote by a whole bunch of political operatives. That's a separate thing that's going on. This is kind of what's emerging from a complaint filed more than a year ago.
No.
So these, just because you file a complaint doesn't mean there's going to be immediate action, because State Elections Enforcement Commission has, mountain ranges of these complaints.
Yeah.
To look, right? And some of them they toss, and some of them, like, I think at the point now, they're still, like, frustrated by hearing all the, media attention, the public attention. Anything with a hangnail is going to get referred, right?
it's like that old thing with grand juries. You can indict a ham sandwich. Is that what we're looking at? Right?
Yeah, just pass it on so we can say we did our due diligence.
Yeah.
A lot of these aren't going to go anywhere. Some will probably go somewhere. Right, and so now they're going to say, okay, we'll refer it and let the criminal division figure it out. And I think that's what's going to happen. And this, then the criminal division is going to go, how many of these things are you referring away? Seriously. Yeah, because I got my sources and saying, oh, God.
Yeah.
So they're going to send us more stuff because they want to take heat off themselves. That's part of the equation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the State Elections Enforcement Commission, Lenny, you and other people have told me, they're understaffed, right? Is that what we keep hearing? They don't have enough people.
Yeah, so they've got cut in the past. So you got cut pretty bad by the Malloy administration, and they've got a lot going on because, this is the entity that oversees public financing of Connecticut races.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to work just on that, just to look at the candidates who are trying to, qualify for public dough. And then you have the other piece of it where they do oversee civil authority over races. And so you have also that investigative division of that office. So, yeah, they could probably use a few more bodies, particularly in the fact that they have so many more cases to look at. So, is Governor Lamont and the legislature inclined to give them more money to take a look at this? Maybe not. We'll see.
Lenny Grimaldi, the guest, only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, I guess we're, as the great Hank Stram used to say, we're matriculating the ball down the field as far as Bridgeport, Stratford, and Success Village. What's the latest on that?
So, tomorrow morning, there's going to be a hearing. Both the city of Bridgeport and the town of Stratford have joined forces and said, we need what they call a receiver, an independent management firm to take over the operation of Sunset Village, which is a co-op that's split between Bridgeport and Stratford. And you've got a couple thousand residents there that have been suffering. No heat, no hot water. We're getting closer to the cold weather season. So they have run into court. They've asked the court to appoint a management firm to take over the operation and get a couple things under control. this antiquated boiler system that goes back to World War II, right? That it's still operating. Seriously, right? And you've got a couple months away, the cold weather season.
Yeah.
And both Stratford and Bridgeport are saying this is going to be a financial and a health nightmare.
Sure.
If we can address this, you're talking about a couple of thousand people.
Yeah.
So tomorrow morning there's going to be a hearing in Superior Court virtually. And this is really just the lawyers get together and say, hey, here's what's going to go on. So the skin in the game for the taxpayers, because both towns have approved a combined loan of $650,000, right, to try to get this boiler system worked out and try to give this co-op some breathing room because they're out of money.
Lenny, one of the big things you've mentioned and the other people I've talked to this is they also have to find out, like, at $500 a month for common charges, they don't know where all the money's going, do they or do they not? I mean, part of that's part of the problem, right?
You hit the nail on the head. Where has the money gone?
Yeah.
Where has the money gone? And so there is an investigation, a criminal investigation going on separately, right? And so it's early yet. But, I mean, all the information I've been trying to unravel today in this discussion is that about 4 to 5 years ago, they seemed to be pretty good shape.
Mm.
The last 4 years when you had a new board and the new board and the new chief of the director of the board, they blew out the old management firm and brought in some other people to run it. And it's gone in another direction. But here's another thing that's going on. Not only has Bridgeport and Stratford going on to court to ask for a new management to take this over.
Yeah.
Two utilities, the Southern Connecticut Gas Company and United Illuminating, have also filed a receivership request because they're claiming they're both owed $1.5 million.
Wow. Somebody, Lenny, somebody's playing around with the money. I mean, I'm no accountant here, but look, I know this is all alleged, but man, oh man, yikes.
So what's going to probably happen is, my guess is, and we'll find out a little bit more tomorrow, I think the utilities will take a back seat to the municipalities because they think they're probably in a better position to get paid if you have the municipal process run its course.
Yeah.
And assuming a judge says, okay, I hear what you're saying, we're going to appoint someone to oversee it, that means that what this request is to abolish at least temporarily,
sure,
the board.
Yeah.
So this would supersede any board decisions. A new management firm would come in.
Yeah.
First things first, let's take over, make sure you have heat and hot water for the cold weather season coming up.
Absolutely.
Then you've got all this money that's owed the utilities and all the money that's owed to the town of Stratford and the city of Bridgeport. You're talking millions in behind.
Oh, my God.
So what happens is so the co-op is like $500 a month.
Yeah.
You know, each co-op has to pay.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about 1,000 units, $500 a month to cover all of these things, you know, to cover the heat, the hot water, to cover the taxes. As you said, over a series of years, where has that money gone?
Exactly.
So someone is starting to really poke into that. So it's two-pronged, short-term, let's get the heat and hot water on so they're safe.
Sure.
It's not a health issue. And then longer term, let's like peel back the onions, as you say, the layers, to find out where did the money go. And it's going to take some time, but you know we'll see how this sorts out by the court because they have no money.
Oh yeah, no that ain't good at 1,000 units at $500 a unit per month. That's millions, Lenny. In about the 45 seconds we have left. Mr. Trump, your old boss, what do you think here? It sounds like over the past couple of days he's trying to get back on message here. So what do you think?
I think first thing he's saying, why in the world did I debate Joe Biden? Yeah, I think he's going to have to really find a way to do it. She's got Kamala Harris has a lot of momentum right now. She's flourishing. There's a lot of energy.
Yep.
He has a good night. I think the polls are going to crease into her favor again. If he starts getting behind 5 or 6 points nationally, he's in real trouble. He's in real trouble. You know, right now he's still within range. He's going to have to dumb it down to people and say, hey, if you got an extra $5 in your pocket, who do you trust more?
Interesting. Well, listen, Lenny, like I said, call him, get him on the phone. You said he might call back if he sees your number. Let me know what he says, all right?
He's going to say, I'm in real trouble, dude. What do I do? And I don't want to answer that question.
All right, Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, thanks. Call Trump on me. Let me know what happens, okay?
Thanks.
All right, bye.